Our next case Disciplinary Counsel versus Paul Lawrence Wallace, case 13-0573. The respondent, Mr. Wallace.
Thank you, Your Honor. I am Paul Wallace. I am the respondent in this case. With the court's permission, I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This matter comes to the court from the board on grievances, and the board itself had issued a recommended sanction to this court of 2 years of suspension with one year of that suspension stayed, followed by a year of monitored probation. As respondent, I did file objections to that report and asked the court to consider that the entire suspension be stayed. The relator in this matter did not file objections, however, they did file a response. There is no real formula that this court has in cases of how to handle disciplinary actions, and has obviously gone to great lengths to customize outcomes based upon the individual facts. In this case, the hearing before the board, the panel of the board, proceeded on the basis of 33 stipulations, stipulated exhibits, a stipulated affidavit of one of the clients involved, and the bank records. For the witnesses, the primary complaining person did not testify, nor did he, nor was an affidavit submitted. The violations themselves were stipulated. There were the two violations that were stipulated relating to the funds not being kept segregated and not being kept in an IALTA account. Secondly, the violation was found that written records of the handling of those funds were not maintained.
Counsel, it's not clear to me, but if you can clear it up, is it my understanding that there is no suggestion that any clients are missing any money?
That is absolutely correct, Your Honor.
I'm over here. Counsel, it's over here to your right.
Okay. I have hearing in one ear only, so I apologize.
I'm sorry. Well, I only have one microphone. So, is there a complaint before the board, however, as to the fee for the BMW settlement? Is the client happy or unhappy?
The client originally, and the copy of the complaint is attached to the record, originally was complained about the amount of fees in this particular case. That was investigated by the disciplinary counsel, and based upon the work that was done, that was not alleged as, and that was not brought up as any of the, to the probable cause panel, that was not part of the original charge. The only charge that was originally in the complaint was that there was the funds weren't returned to the client promptly. That was that was dismissed by stipulations. The client got the money the day after they asked for it in its entirety.
Well, there was a misrepresentation, though, as to the original amount, the difference between $36,000 and $24,000.
Okay, if I may, Your Honor, explain a little bit about background. I don't want to go into too much detail, but as the facts came out before the panel, originally there was a case involving a different vehicle with the same people. They were on the same insurance policy. One vehicle belonged to Ms. Towles. The other one belonged to Mr. Jackson. The original one with, and both insurance companies, one car, the first car belonged to Ms. Towles, the second one belonged entirely to Ms. Jackson. Both were free and clear. Both were insured, however, under a joint policy, even though they didn't live together. I was originally hired to handle the first case involving Ms. Towles' car, which had suffered a break-in and some $8,000 worth of electronic equipment had been taken from it. It had been accepted by the insurance company under a reservation of rights. Initially, I was paid, I believe, $200 or $300 to get involved with that. As to that particular case, that was ultimately resolved with Liberty Mutual. The check was forwarded directly to Ms. Towles in the joint names of her and Mr. Jackson. At that point, they then asked me to get involved with several other matters, including his book publishing and everything else. The court's specific question, however, is to that check with Liberty Mutual. That matter was also done. His car was supposedly stolen, taken away, destroyed. Once again, the car was free and clear, and again, the Liberty Mutual had taken the case on under a reservation of rights. There were several months spent in working with Liberty Mutual on that one and convincing them that ultimately the claim needed to be paid. During that time, from March till about the end of June, Mr. Jackson was in jail, primarily in Butler County, where we conversed by phone, usually in a three-way conversation. Went up to the jail in Delaware County once he was transferred there. And these were all, it's based on federal charges, but he was held locally. And I saw him on about a weekly basis. His concerns were he wanted the money to publish his book. Obviously, I was getting concerned about the amount of funds that would be involved with paying for all the work he was now having done relating to the book, his new corporations, some real estate matters. There were three or four other matters that are in the record as well. Very simply, what happened at that point is I do not ever recall expressly telling him the amount. However, he said, well, I can pay you something, but can't you wait until the book gets out? And this is, taken from the record.
All right, well, let's back up about this. I'm looking at the fact that you put money in an IOLTA account, $32,000, and when it came time to pay out the money, it wasn't there.
No, Your Honor, the money was always paid out as requested. Okay. The money that was paid out was ultimately to be used for the publication of the book. The money that they asked to be paid in the interim, which was for his editor, there were some advertising funds, there were some funds to set up his corporation. Those funds were all paid as soon as they were asked for.
But somebody had to contact Liberty Mutual to find out that there was $32,000, not $24,000? You misled as to the amount of the check?
I'm trying to find the correct way to answer that, Your Honor, because what was done with Mr. Jackson was it was agreed to him, this is your fees, this is how much you're getting out of this, okay? And for the life of me, I did not do a closing statement, and I should have. But this is, of course, over the course of several conversations. The short answer is I do not recall, and that's what I put in the statement, telling him the original amount of the check. Ms. Towles and I never had the discussion at all because we never talked about the check. But he was told that out of the check, he would net $24,000, and that was his budget, and that's what we used for it, and that my funds were being paid out of that check, and that was what was agreed to. Is that a misrepresentation? That's why I stipulated to the selfish part, Your Honor, because very simply, I don't know that Mr. Jackson is wise enough to know that if you take $9,000 and the roughly $22,000 or $23,000 we had talked about, it adds up to the amount of the check. Ultimately, when they asked for funds to be paid out and to be returned, those were returned the next day. They asked, they basically showed up with another attorney but Ms. Tao showed up with another attorney in November. Came in and basically called and said, hey, we're in the neighborhood, can I stop by? And she did that frequently and came in with another attorney.
And terminated relationship with
No.
you as attorney?
No, absolutely not. From that point on, she came back. I gave her the figures as was in her affidavit as to what she asked what the amount was. She didn't say it. She didn't declare this is the amount I was told. She said, how much was the total check? She got that. She got a rough breakdown while we were sitting there on a scribbled note. And that's in her affidavit. As to what it was, she said, it's fine. We talked about the fees. She said, let me check with Nigel and make sure that's okay with him. She called me, said, okay, this is fine. I want the balance of the money paid out, $10,000 to Nigel's corporation. I want the balance paid to my mother. I verified that with Nigel, and the funds were paid that would have been the next day, probably 2 days after they came in, after she came in on it. I continued to work not only on the book, I worked on filing motions for relief from several real estate liens they had, worked on several other matters for them relating to, the biggest thing, of course, was the book itself. We did some publishing contracts for a second and third book, did the advertising contracts, and several other matters as well, including from that point on, I worked for them pretty much through, that was for both Ms. Towles and Nigel, through May of 2010.
So but you stipulated to behavior that is disciplinable, correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay. And now you say that the recommendation that is made here, which is 2 years with one stayed, and then monitoring for a third year.
It's a little unclear whether it's monitoring during the stay or this year after that, but I would presume they would want it afterwards.
All right. You would argue against that. It's too severe?
Your Honor, I think in this case, most of the cases that you are looking at in this matter where this comes, and I know the court particularly, Madam Chief Justice, you yourself are very concerned about this particular issue, these types of issues involving IALTA accounts. However, in this case, as pointed out by Relator, there are no cases that talk about any prior discipline involved where there's been a fully stayed suspension under these circumstances. There is, however, also no cases which talk about an additional 16-month suspension that was imposed, actually wasn't imposed. It just kind of continued on in the matter.
That's not before us, and that was a situation where you were legitimately disciplined. There was another case that ultimately resulted in your benefit, to your benefit, but you were not to be reinstated while there was a pending disciplinary case. That applies to anybody in a situation that you found yourself in.
That is correct, Your Honor. However, under these circumstances, particularly where the second allegation was, to put it bluntly, and I would ask the court to review the record on that, the allegation on the second one that kept it going for an additional 16 months was a matter of was supposedly practicing law within the first couple of days afterwards, mm-hmm. and secondly, disobeying this court's order. This court, as to the practice of law, it was very clearly a clerical matter that was found and dismissed immediately by the panel and the board. The second issue as to notification, which is what really kept it going for the bulk of the time, was that this court had ordered that opposing counsel be notified in pending litigation, and clearly there was no pending litigation. That was incredibly clear, and that's why this court unanimously dismissed the complaint based solely on that portion of it. That 16 months I realize it doesn't matter to this particular incident, Your Honor, but again, as indicated when this thing first started, at the end of a 6-month suspension, I still had a law firm, I still had people, I still had clerical staff. At the end of two years, I had nothing. And basically, it's taken 10 years to almost build back up. I was incredibly careless in this matter. I recognize what I did was wrong with the way of handling it. That is not the way it is to be handled. On the other hand, I also made sure that, as was stipulated, the clients were not harmed. As in fact, the clients continued to have me work for them for a period of over 6 months afterwards, and very successfully, and they were pleased with what was done. They got incredible results on this particular matter. Your Honor, this is, to put it bluntly, Your Honor, what I'm asking for is for the court to consider that at this point in time, it's almost impossible. Any substantial suspension, actual suspension, pretty much puts me in a position where I cannot practice, where pretty much my practice is over. It's taken almost 10 years to rebuild to the point of doing this. This is my own fault. I put myself in this position. I recognize that. At the same time, I do not believe the public is in danger. Disciplinary counselor reviewed over a year's worth of records from my accounts. This is what they had. It was wrong. I understand that. I'm only happy that, basically the clients were able to be taken care of. And I'm actually happy that I actually got to continue to work for them. And, Your Honor, my time is long up.
Thank you. Mr. Caligiuri.
May it please the court, Chief Justice O'Connor, distinguished members of this court. My name is Joe Caligiuri. I represent the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. I'd like to address a couple of Mr. Wallace's arguments here today. He states in this matter that he was incredibly careless. What he was incredibly dishonest. And to answer both of the Chief Justice's questions that were put to him, A, was there a misrepresentation regarding the value of the check? The answer is yes. The lawyer, Mr. Wallace, never told his client how much the check was for. He told him he would net $24,000. That's not what happened. He netted $23,495 despite being asked what the value of the check was. The only reason a lawyer would not tell their client the gross value of the check was because the lawyer didn't want the client to know how much he had skimmed off the top. And with regard to your second question, was there money put in an IOLTA and taken out? The respondent replied today, the money was always there. That is an absolute misrepresentation today. He stipulated that he misappropriated those funds within 2 months of putting them in, every single cent, $32,132.80, gone. It wasn't until he went to the jail, that was in August of 2004. In late September or early October of 2009, he went to the jail, saw his client, and told him, again making a misrepresentation, that he was prepared at that point to make the distributions. When he made that statement, he had $134 in his trust account and $1,500 in his operating account. There was no money. And contrary to what he's saying is when they asked for their money, they got it. That's not true. Nigel Jackson, if you look at his grievance, which the respondent stipulated to, Nigel was in jail this entire time. In his grievance, Nigel said, I told him to make the distributions. The distributions didn't get made until the end of November 2009. And that's because, again, Nigel was unaware of how much the check was for, but more importantly, the respondent didn't have the money. And like he said in his objections, but for the grace of God or good fortune, these clients got their money and no one was harmed. What it was he got some fees to come in and was able to pay these people. But in addition to the theft, the misappropriation, he forged his client's signatures on the checks. There's no question about that. If you look at Exhibit 1 and Exhibit 5, Exhibit 1 being the grievance, Exhibit 5 being the affidavit of Aisha Tolles, they both say that he did not have permission to sign their names, and that when they looked in the checks, they realized that he had forged their names. And he did that because he hadn't come up with a fee agreement with his client. On one hand, he testified in the disciplinary proceeding that he had had over $20,000 of legal fees in this case for Nigel and Aisha Tolles. And that in July of 2009, he and Nigel had agreed on $9,000. The reason why we know that's false is because if a lawyer who has over $20,000 built up in fees agrees to wipe out over half his bill, the first check that he's going to cut from those proceeds is for $9,000. He doesn't do that. The first check is $6,000 after he deposits the money. Then he takes $4,000. Then he takes another $6,000 and he systematically depletes all the money. As Nigel stated in his grievance in Exhibit 1, there never was a fee agreement. Respondent says it was $200 an hour. Nigel says they never came up with an agreement. But most importantly in this case, at the hearing, the respondent asked on page 93 of the transcript, asked the panel to make a recommendation of a fully state suspension or a 6-month actual suspension. The critical point in this case is that it's a time-off case. The respondent has been previously disciplined for repeatedly lying to a client, and here we are again. Repeated lies, and this time, exaggerated misconduct by misappropriating a substantial amount of money, over almost $25,000. In addition to the forgery, the failure to safekeep the cash that he received from Aisha on behalf of Nigel, the failure to keep adequate records, all sorts of disciplinary violations. Relator is not aware of any case in which this court has imposed a fully stayed suspension upon a lawyer with previous discipline when the subsequent case involves misappropriation. And when you consider the depth of respondent's misconduct and the fact that he exploited the situation with his client in jail, there's absolutely no reason to depart from precedent. So we would ask that you uphold or adopt the board's recommendation, impose a 2-year suspension with 1 year stayed, along with 1 year of monitored probation.
Does the probation monitored concurrent with the 1 year, is the clarification on that?
I believe it was intended to be upon the reinstatement, so the second year of the stay, there would be a monitor put in place.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Wallace, you have about a minute left.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, the first thing I'd like to make very clear is my statement that there is a difference between what funds were available in the IALTA and what funds I had. That matter came up with the hearing in response to a question from disciplinary counsel. In fact, I believe it was one of the final hearings questions in the case. Were funds available to pay? And the answer at that point was, yes, they were. They were available not in the IALTA, which is clearly not true. The court's got those records in front of it, but they were available from personal funds or whatever else needed to be done to get these things taken care of. Secondly,
why weren't they taken care of right away? Why was there a delay?
There, and again, I have no idea where this is coming from at this point in time that he wanted funds to be distributed because the book wasn't ready for publication. There were no funds to be paid. The funds to be paid were to be done to publish the
you
book.
You did take the IALTA money out and use it inappropriately.
That is correct, Your Honor. Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
100%.
And once, you know, you realized you had done that, why didn't you put money right back into the IALTA account from this other source of money you had simultaneously? And better yet, why did you take money out of your IALTA account if you had other money that you could have used to pay whatever you needed to pay that you used the IALTA account money for?
Your Honor, as I testified at the hearing, at that point in time, my books were a total mess, and things went from as quickly as they could from one account to the other and paid, and very frankly, I was not paying anywhere near the attention I should have to anything at that point. On the other hand, as the records show, no client got hurt. Mr. Jackson didn't, there was no place for the money to go. I really would dispute the allegation that funds were to be distributed to him shortly after they were received.
Well,
that would have been done. It would have been simpler. They would have been
done. So the bottom line is you shouldn't have been distributing any money out of the IALTA account.
100%. Absolutely correct, Your Honor. The other thing I need to point out is on the forgery, I would direct the court's attention to the finding in paragraph 16 of the report that very clearly makes it the finding of fact is that Mr. Jackson was aware that the money was coming to me, was going to be deposited to the account. There's correspondence from Mr. Jackson indicating that's in the record that indicates that he knew I had the check, it had been deposited. In fact, there's a check that says don't tell Aisha that the feds took the money.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We'll take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision.